There are more than a few odious governments around the world that, despite their record on human rights or democracy, freedom of the press, you name it, still manage to find friends in high places in Washington, D.C. Some such regimes enjoy natural resources like oil, others occupy strategic positions, and many employ lobbyists to polish a dictator's reputation or put the best possible spin on the latest affront to human dignity. Ken Silverstein, the Washington editor of Harper's Magazine, wondered what lobbyists promise to do for foreign governments, how they do it, and how much of it is visible to Congress and the public. To find out, Silverstein went undercover. What he found and how he found it are both controversial. Later in the hour, we'll talk with Republican presidential candidate Tom Tancredo of Colorado. You can email questions for Congressman Tancredo now to talk@npr.org. But first, lobbying for dictators. How far do lobbyists go to promote the interests of foreign countries, and how far should reporters go to get the story? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ken Silverstein joins us here in Studio 3A. His article in Harper's is called "Their Men in Washington," and it's nice to have you on the show today.
Thank you very much.
So why did you do this?
Well, the idea that lobbyists for foreign dictatorships are not entirely ethical is not a brand new idea. So that wasn't really the main point of the story, although we did want to show as opposed to simply tell, which is why we opted in part. There were a number of reasons we opted for an undercover route. But the real political point of the story, the real whole point of the story, was that these firms are able to operate under the radar screen. They pull strings, they seek to manipulate public opinion and political opinion, and they do their very best to cover their tracks. And we wanted to expose that. The law that applies to foreign lobbyists is from 1938, the Foreign Agents Registration Act, which incidentally was put into place after Hitler hired a PR lobbyist in the United States. It's been revised several times, but it is not up to the job. And the firms are able to really get away with murder. And to the extent that the law does apply to them, they're easily able to evade it, which is, you know, I had a rough idea of that going in. I have a much better idea of that now based on what the lobbyists told me.
Mm-hmm. And these were things you couldn't find out with a simple, hi, I'm Ken Silverstein from Harper's Magazine. Do you mind if I talk to you for a few minutes?
Absolutely not. There's no way. These firms will tell you that they're all on the up and up, and they're transparent, and they don't do anything duplicitous. But the whole reason you hire a lobbyist is, in fact, that the firms are able to manipulate their contacts with members of the administration and with Congress. They're able to use their access in a way that they can do things for you that the public is simply not aware of. Let me give you one example. APCO Associates told me that, you know, they have a media campaign for Turkmenistan, and they told me that they have someone on staff who does nothing but plant op-eds in newspapers. That's his job. Great job, right? Now, not only do they plant the op-eds, but they write them, and then they go out and they find, a friendly, flunky academic or a think tank figure or a government official to put their name on it. And this is straight out of their presentation to me. I happened to bring the PowerPoint, mm-hmm. a copy of the PowerPoint presentation that APCO gave me. And here in their core media relations activities, they say, we will write, find signatories for, and place opinion pieces in key publications. Okay, so no, this is not something the public is supposed to know about.
Mm-hmm. Let's step back a minute. To Turkmenistan?
Well, I thought North Korea was absolutely over the top. That was my first pick because, you know, that's probably the worst regime on the planet. But Turkmenistan is certainly a close second. And this is an absolute horrible Stalinist dictatorship. The old leader, the self-declared Turkmenbashi, who built various monuments to himself, renamed the month of January after himself, salt and vodka in Turkmenistan are named after him. He dies last December, and he's replaced in a completely fraudulent election early this year by his former personal dentist, another Stalinist hack. And so this guy has taken power. It's as rotten a regime as you'll find anywhere. And we really, you know, this was not putting a wallet full of money in front of Boy Scouts. We pushed this to the very limit. If these firms had done any due diligence, they should have stepped back and said, no, this is beyond the pale. We picked Turkmenistan, A. B, we created this bogus company called the Malden Group, which If you do a Google search based on my description of the Malden Group, which I said was involved in the export of natural gas from Turkmenistan to Eastern European markets, you'll very, very quickly discover that that whole natural gas trade from Turkmenistan is completely crooked and corrupt. There's a group called Global Witness that put out a report called It's a Gas, Gas, Gas about Turkmenistan. And they describe the role of intermediary firms, which are simply there to export revenues offshore.
So what you're suggesting is that these lobbying organizations should have been, first of all, hesitant to take on Turkmenistan as a client, or indirectly even perhaps more cautious about taking something like this fictitious Malden Group.
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't flat out say it, but it was coded, so it was very clear that the Malden Group was absolutely a shady firm and probably mobbed up. And let me also point out that we gave them a third reason, a very good reason to opt out, not to do this. I said to them, you know, the firm, APCO, said to me, oh, by the way, we can't find anything out about the Malden Group for a very good reason. We didn't exist. What can you tell us? And I said, I'll tell you almost nothing. I've told you what I'm willing to tell you. Discretion is the very hallmark of our business model, our business operation. Because of the sensitivity of our position in Turkmenistan, I'm not really going to tell you much at all about us. And APCO volunteered. I didn't even ask. They said, fine, we'll sign a confidentiality agreement. So they were not only willing to work for the firm on behalf of this Stalinist regime, but they were willing to keep everybody's secrets as well.
Mm-hmm. What's wrong with working for Turkmenistan? I mean, these are private companies that make a living selling their services to various institutions, from any kind of companies to foreign governments. Turkmenistan might be your idea or my idea of the greatest state in the world, but if they want to hire a lobbyist in Washington, who's to say no?
Well, what I would say is that, you know, this is the lobbyists will frequently say to you, you know, hey, every in a court of law, every defendant is entitled to a lawyer, you know,
right.
And that I don't know how they're going to defend this, but typically that's what you will hear from lobbyists. You know, hey, Jeffrey Dahmer deserved a defense attorney. This is not an equivalent situation, okay? They're not defending them in a court of law. They're defending them in the court of public opinion and public policy, and their whole goal is to buff the image of the regime and to strengthen ties between the regime and the United States and, in effect, to consolidate the power of a very, very awful regime. I mean, this is, as I said, one of the world's worst. I mean, we talked about the human rights situation in Turkmenistan in our story. A guy who asked to stage a peaceful protest was sent to a psychiatric hospital for several years. You've got lots of political prisoners. You had 16 ministers who were sent off into exile or house arrest. One of them died while in prison. You've got a very, very bad situation there. Mm. This is not just a run-of-the-mill rotten regime. It's one of the worst.
So I can understand how to dramatize the story. You decide to go undercover, say, firm X willing to work for Hitler, basically, is what you're saying, right?
I'm saying that firm X is not only willing to work for one of the world's worst regimes, but we want to see how they're going to do it, how they're going to cover their tracks, and how they're going to seek to trick political opinion and public opinion.
Mm-hmm. Lobbyists, you've written a book about lobbyists in the past. This is not a hard world to get into, to understand what it is they do and how they do it.
It's very hard because the Foreign Agents Registration Act requires very little of lobbyists. The disclosure laws are very weak. And in fact, both of the firms that I met with, you know, I said, gee, we don't want any publicity for the Malden Group. And they said, oh, don't worry about that. We have to disclose very little. We don't have to tell the public very much. Basic minimal information. And I said, well, gee, but what happens if I get calls? And one of the lobbyists at APCO said with a big smile, in that case, have them call us. Mm-hmm. It's all a game. You know, let's see how much of this we can keep hidden from the public.
And you talked about manipulating public opinion with the placement of op-eds. What else were these companies willing to do for you?
Well, they said that, you know, gee, it's this post-Abramoff climate. It's going to be tough to arrange a congressional trip over there, but we might be able to do it. You know, certainly we have the context so that if there's a congressional delegation going to the region, we can ask them to stop in Turkmenistan. But then one of the lobbyists at APCO said to me, but gee, hold on a second. You know, there's this little loophole we might be able to work, because under the old laws, he said, I'll have to check the new laws, but under the old lobbying laws before the Abramoff scandal, if you found a university or a think tank, they could sponsor the trip. And they said, we could look into it and see if there's a Turkmen university who could sponsor it. And that is, let me point out, that is technically legal under the new rules. So they'd go find a Turkmen university to front for the Maldon group, basically, and bring members of Congress over there to tell them how wonderful things are over there. They also said that they would set up third-party events. Therefore, it would be, you know, this is an event on Turkmenistan, not sponsored by the Maldon group or the Turkmen embassy, because that'll be too obvious that it's paid advertising. We'll get a respected third party to sponsor the event. They said, you know, for $25,000, we can pay roll call to host an event, and we wouldn't want to do something like call it Turkmenistan Day, because again, that'll be too obvious. We'll call it Energy Security Day or Caspian Basin Pipelines, so that we can hide the fact that it's paid advertising, yet we'll completely control the agenda. Everyone there will think it's an independent event, but we'll have invited people who are sure to get across your point of view.
Let's see if we can get a caller on the line. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. This is Tom. Tom with us from Sioux City in Iowa.
Yes, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I'm personally disappointed that you didn't try and represent North Korea, because I think you would have been surprised at how many people were willing to take your money in a situation like that. I'm very cynical about the lobbying situation, especially since Abramoff, but I wish you had done North Korea, and it would have been a much better story. And if Gary Trudeau was listening, I think that'd be a great client for Duke.
Well,
now that he's lobbying.
I don't. Well, thanks for your suggestion, but I don't think North Korea would have worked, because that is flat out against the law, and you would not be able to get away with lobbying for North Korea. Turkmenistan is not on the banned states list, so it was not flat out illegal. But I will say, and one of the reasons we didn't pick APCO and Cassidy by accident. We looked for firms that had a history of shady tactics and that had been willing to represent dictators in the past. APCO in the mid-90s represented the Sani Abacha dictatorship in Nigeria, and they were working for him the month that he hung 9 pro-democracy activists. This is a guy who ended up, after he fell, it turned out he had exported $3 to $5 billion of Nigerian revenues to Switzerland.
We're talking, thanks very much for the call, Tom.
Thank you.
We're talking about lobbying for foreign governments, and when we come back, we'll talk with a lobbyist from one of the firms that was mentioned in Ken Silverstein's article and get a different point of view. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tom Tancredo, one of the Republican presidential hopefuls, will join us a little bit later. You can email your questions for him to talk@npr.org. But right now we're talking with Harper's Washington editor Ken Silverstein about his article, Their Men in Washington, Undercover with D.C.'s Lobbyists for Hire. There's a link to it at npr.org/blogofthenation. Of course, you're welcome to join us. How far do lobbyists go to promote the interests of foreign countries, and how far should reporters go to get the story? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also weigh in at our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And joining us now is B.J. Cooper. He's Deputy Managing Director of APCO, APCO Worldwide's Washington office. You'd think I'd get a job in radio. One of the firms that Ken Silverstein wrote about. He's with us here in 3A. And thanks very much for taking the time to join us today. And we've heard Ken Silverstein explain his article. Let's give you a chance to respond.
Yeah, well, let me try to correct a couple of things that Kent said, because the premise that he came in on was not that the client was the government of Turkmenistan. The client was, as he told our folks, a group of investors who invest in Turkmenistan.
The Maldon Group, yes.
No, actually, it was a Lebanese investor, he told us when he called. I think the Maldon Group was one of the group of investors, but there was another group, including some Lebanese investors. Also, this was a first meeting, not a last meeting. This was the beginning of what typically in our business is a longer process, sometimes months, sometimes years, tell you the truth, sometimes weeks. It's as much us interviewing the client as the client interviewing us, which also kind of goes to one of the points Ken raised, which he said that we had asked in the middle of the meeting about a confidentiality agreement, which is true, that we did ask for a confidentiality agreement, and that I talked to the fellow who asked that this morning, and that was primarily because we thought once we had one, we can learn who the client was.
I see.
Once we learn who the client is, we can make a clearer determination as to whether we're going to take that client or not. As I say, it's the first meeting, not the last meeting. I think the tactics of the journalism, I'm a former journalist myself, are pretty low. candidly. I looked up before I came over what NPR, which is a relatively respected journalistic
kind
outlet.
Kind of you to say.
Thank you, which I believe. But what your standards are, mm-hmm. and your standards are that you don't impersonate someone else. Under those rules, Ken couldn't be sitting at this table, I don't think, because...
I went back and looked at our rules because I suspected this might come up, uh-huh. except under unusual circumstances.
Doesn't say that, but I won't argue the point.
It does say that. I can read you...
I have it right here myself.
Right, except occasionally information that serves important journalistic purposes about illegal or antisocial activities or fraudulent activities cannot be obtained by more open means.
Okay. Well, that would presume something fraudulent was going on.
Yes.
The other point I would make is that we handled this, in my view, in a very honest, transparent, which is why I'm here to continue mm-hmm. the transparency, transparent way. And frankly, Ken didn't. I mean, he made a phony business card, phony website, phony story.
So you feel like you were lied to?
Oh, there's no question. We were lied to. I think he admits that. But also, I want to make it real clear, not that I'm saying it would make a huge difference, but the client here, as presented to us, was not the government of Turkmenistan. We have a due diligence process that our firm follows. We're at the beginning of that process, but before the meeting, for example, we had folks call people we know at the in the U.S. government mm-hmm. to say, what do you think of this? You know, is this something the government, that's a good thing or a bad thing for our government? And they were quite surprised that the government of Turkmenistan would maybe give a wink to a group of investors in their country who would want to do such a thing. And they took that as a good sign. Now, I'm not saying the State Department was saying take on this client, because that's not what they were saying. But to us, it was, for the first meeting, enough to go in and talk, try to learn more about what this client wanted us to do, mm-hmm. What we thought, if anything, we could do for them, and begin the hopefully longer process of determining whether we would take this client. The journalism involved is kind of journalism of convenience and contrivance. It was one meeting. Candidly, if I was going to go undercover, I probably would have done a few meetings to see how far this went. And contrivance, in that I think that Ken had a preconceived notion of what lobby firms, which we are not strictly a lobby firm, but mm-hmm. is part of what we do, what lobby firms are and do, and he picked out pieces of that conversation that fit that theory, mm-hmm. and thus we have a piece. I think mm-hmm. the piece is totally out of context of that conversation, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the pieces that he brought up in our conversation, which I knew you were listening to, was the idea that you have somebody on staff whose mm-hmm. job it is to place op-ed pieces.
He used the word plant, and I would argue with the word plant. We do have, a lot of us do that, tell you the truth. I mean, I've written 100,000 op-eds in my career in newspapers and government as a spokesman and in the private sector. It's part of what you do. You write for the principal. The principal has to approve it and
right.
accept it. Nobody is being, you know, it's not a place where you go out and find anybody who can sign these things. You need somebody with credibility. Probably the dirty little secret of that nature of the business is you go to people who probably agree with you and like to get published, and they read it. They work on the op-ed. If we drafted it, often they'll draft it themselves. And you find people who will agree with the things your client is interested in who will sign the op-ed.
And another tactic that he mentioned was this idea of what would in effect be Turkmenistan Day, an official from the government along with various other people, again, maybe some of these friendly academics, and presented under the auspices of a third party.
Sure, but typically the third party will advertise who's paying for the
right.
for the event. So transparency, again, is there. There are organizations, and Ken mentioned a couple of them that I heard do this, and I think we've worked with, who will sponsor these kinds of things if they're paid by sponsors who are willing to be identified. And it is totally transparent, in my view. The work we do with the Congress is transparent based on the law, and we can all agree that there's probably changes needed in the lobby laws, significant changes. We, at APCO, go overboard with the reporting to the point that if you look up our FARA filings, you'll also find that we file, not required by law, but we think it's the right thing to do, what our people who work in that area contribute to candidates. Mm-hmm. That's probably where Ken has found those contributions, I assume. If not, he can find them there. I looked at them myself this morning before I came over. And again, that's transparent. When we go see a congressman, we bring our clients to see the congressman. So the client is there to discuss this with him. If we don't bring the client, which is rare, we will tell the congressman who we're representing.
Let's see if we can get some listeners involved in the conversation again and turn to Martha. Martha's with us from Des Moines in Iowa.
I think that your first guest, thank you for taking my call. I think that
sure.
your first guest made a statement to the effect that he couldn't have done this with North Korea because that would have been against the law. And I guess my question for either one of the guests is, what countries would this be against the law? Is it only North Korea, Syria, and Iran, or could you do it with Myanmar, companies that or countries that have, you know, really egregious human rights records?
Mm-hmm.
Could you do it with the Sudan?
Is there a list?
I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, it's not based on countries that have an egregious human rights record because there are many of those. As I pointed out, we picked Turkmenistan because it's about as low as you can sink. But the countries that would be illegal would be Cuba. I believe it would be Cuba, Iran, Syria, and Sudan. They're in North Korea. I mean, they're countries where Americans are banned from traveling to and where it's illegal to have commerce with those countries. That's the distinction.
And B.J. Cooper, does that list strike you as...
It sounds right. I honestly don't know. It sounds right. But I'd like to add that it's not just what the government list might be. We at APCO, we make our own determination. There may be a country that isn't on the list that we would choose not to work for. In fact, there was one recently, which I, for obvious reasons, won't name, but approached us 2 years ago for representation. And at that time, we began our due diligence, as we did in this case, talked to our government about whether they thought this was a good idea. They said, we're trying to improve relations with that country, and this is a good idea. And we I won't say encourage it, because I don't want to put the government in the position of endorsing this, but we're not dissuaded from pursuing it. We continued the discussions. That went on and off for 2 years. I don't say consistently. There were months that we didn't talk to them. And finally, 2 years later, they came back and said, we want to hire you, and here's a budget, and here's what we want you to do. And we said, no, thank you, because the government's attitude had changed. And we didn't think
that this would... Boy, I'd love to know what that country was.
I'm sure you would.
The standards that APCO has demonstrated in the past. I mean, you worked for the Abacha regime the month that they hung 9 pro-democracy activists. That speaks highly of your ethics. You represented the government of Kazakhstan, which the president just essentially declared himself president for life. You set up on behalf of Philip Morris a bogus front group called Contributions Watch, a story I'm proud to have broken some years ago, where you...
We're talking about foreign governments here.
Well, it's, I mean, but the, we picked APCO precisely because, I mean, Nigeria, Kazakhstan...
Right, those are relevant. Okay. Let's just stick to that for a minute.
Well, the tactics as well are rather... shady.
Fair enough. Turning back to you, B.J. Cooper, to your knowledge, did this government then proceed to get representation elsewhere in Washington?
I believe they did.
You believe so? It wouldn't have been if your company had problems, somebody else didn't.
I'm here for my company.
You're here for your company as well. Let me turn back to you Ken Silverstein, ask you the questions about your ethics that were raised by B.J. Cooper about the reasons for going undercover and as he says, taking things out of context.
Oh, well, taking things out of context. I mean, with all due respect, I mean, he's a strategic communications specialist, which in effect means he's a paid liar. I mean, his whole job is to spin and distort the news, and that's what he's seeking to do here. I mean, that's what PR firms do. I mean, if you want Coke to be better than Pepsi, they can make it better than Pepsi. And if you want to do the reverse, they'll do the reverse. The idea that they were doing any sort of due diligence is ridiculous, and that this was just a first meeting is absolute, you know, and that they were going to really think about it. I mean, if it was a first meeting, you know, Barry Schumacher, who set up the meeting, then why did Barry, you know, sort of desperately send me emails and say how interested they were in getting the contract and offered to fly to London? He was coming to London and he wanted to meet with us before we made any decision because I had told him a decision was in the offing. And they wanted to meet with us before the decision was made to further press their case. And when I told them they were not getting the contract, he expressed keen disappointment and told me, gee, could you tell us why? We hate to get turned down. The idea that this was something that, you know, they were only examining is ridiculous. In terms of the ethics, you know what? I'm willing to lay my ethics next to yours. I think I look very good in comparison. I wanted to come. I'm not going to deny it. It would be stupid and dishonest, and I won't try to spin this in any way. We deceived you. We did. And we thought there was a public interest at stake. We think that your firm and many firms like yours manipulate public and political opinion, and we wanted to expose that to the public, and we wanted to show that the laws need to be tightened up. And you, on the other hand, agreed to represent one of the world's worst regimes on behalf of a firm that was clearly mobbed up, and you offered to sign a confidentiality agreement. If you want to compare the ethics of that, I'll compare them, and I think I look good. And I'd also say that...
Well, why don't you let him respond?
Okay.
Okay.
Well, first of all, nowhere did you indicate that this was the government of Turkmenistan we were representing. It was a group of investors. Secondly, we never agreed to represent anybody. This was a first meeting where we discussed broad stroke kinds of things we do. And we do that partly so that we can get the client to better hone what he or she's looking for, so we can develop a strategy that would make sense for them if we choose to take on the client. I personally resent being called a liar. And a professional liar, too. I resent that. And I'll put my 35-year career up against your 35-year career. But that's not what we're here for.
All right. We're talking with B.J. Cooper, Deputy Managing Director of the Washington Office of APCO, and with Ken Silverstein, the Washington editor of Harper's Magazine. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is Todd. Todd with us from Detroit.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that, you know, as a business owner in Detroit, as I hire people that can represent me in the best possible light, and a firm like APCO obviously would be hired to support their country in the best possible light. That's why they are obviously a large corporation and do quite well. I understand you're with Ken or whatever this guy's name is, reporter, his take on this, but quite frankly, I would hire someone like APCO in a heartbeat if I thought they could represent me in the best possible light with any potential client, regardless of our situation or who we are.
Yeah, and Ken, I think we raised that earlier. Of course, people, whether they're representatives of investment groups or odious governments, certainly want open. There's reasons they want doors opened in Washington.
Hey, APCO was voted, on their website, they say they were voted PR Firm of the Year in 2006. I'm not denying they're good at what they do. That's exactly why people come to hire them, I suppose. I'm saying that, you know, this guy in Detroit, I'm sure he's a legitimate business owner, and if he... saying that he would want to hire a good PR firm, I mean, why would I dispute that? I'm writing about representing a government that really has a horrible record and where they're going to try to paint it in the most favorable light. That's different than painting a firm in Detroit in the most favorable light.
Once again, there was no discussion of the government being represented in this case.
It was
a group of investors, as you point out in your article alone. And the thing I would like to say before my time runs out, because I know my time is running out, though Ken will continue.
Well, if we've got 3 minutes left, I think we'll keep you both here.
I appreciate that. Is that APCO prides itself in almost 25 years of business on running in an honest way with a lot of integrity and transparency. And I will give you a list of clients you can talk to, a list of former clients you can talk to, who will attest to that. I was with a client last night, and when he heard about the story, he said, what do you want me to do? You want me to write a letter? You want me to talk about it? And I said, we'll take care of this. But I'm almost obviously speechless in trying to respond to the charges when there are no facts to back up his charges. There is nothing in the meeting that he held with our people that was based on his lies, not our lies, that wasn't transparent and honest. And please don't keep holding up this confidentiality agreement. The confidentiality agreement was a way for us to determine who you were representing and to get to the bottom of it.
The idea that you were transparent in the meeting and that you were fully honest, what you're saying is that you were very transparent and honest about your willingness to do this work. This distinction you're making between the Malden Group and Turkmenistan is ridiculous. I said flat out, and I will be happy to post on our website the emails, that we wanted to do this. We wanted to hire your firm to enhance our stake in Turkmenistan, and that the purpose of the contract was to improve the image of the regime in Turkmenistan and to strengthen relations with the United States. The distinction between the Malden Group and Turkmenistan really didn't exist. And to the extent that, I mean, in any case, so I guess you were willing to represent a mobbed-up firm that was exporting billions to offshore accounts, but you weren't willing to represent Turkmenistan. Well, gee, I mean, I guess that speaks well of you.
We have 30 seconds left, and B.J. Cooper, it's yours.
Let me say for the final time, it was a first meeting, not a last meeting. There was a discussion that was taking place, and I don't know how this would have come out, to tell you the truth, based on the kinds of things you're saying, you're not our type of client. To tell you the truth, we probably wouldn't have taken you on.
You were just so disappointed you didn't get the contract, though, that you asked me if there was anything you could do to get it.
Right. We'll leave it there. Ken Silverstein, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
The article in Harper's Magazine is called Their Men in Washington, Undercover with D.C. Lobbyists for Hire. And we'd like to thank B.J. Cooper of APCO for joining us also here in Studio 3A today. I know this can't be fun, but we appreciate your taking the time to join us. B.J. Cooper was with us here in Studio 3A. Coming up, the next in our series of conversations with presidential hopefuls, Republican Tom Tancredo joins us. If you have questions for the congressman from Colorado, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Back in a minute. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.